Welcome back to Assessment, Joining the Dots, our monthly podcast covering all things assessment. Thank you so much for supporting us and tuning in to listen to our latest episode. We are GL Assessment, or GL Education, depending on where you are in the world. We're a Renaissance company, and our formative standardised assessments are used by millions of learners in thousands of schools in over 100 countries worldwide. Whether to inform teaching and learning strategy, or to help guide personalised learning decisions, we are passionate about supporting teachers and leaders to make the best use of your data insights. If you've joined us for previous episodes, then you'll be familiar with our recurring segments, including our Lightbulb Moment and our Data Spotlights, where we demystify commonly used terminology. So whether you're using our assessments or not, if you feel like you could do with knowing a bit more about assessment, we hope that Assessment, Joining the Dots, is for you. I'm Sophie Dawes, a GL Assessment Specialist for Wellcom. In this role, I use my experience as a former modern languages teacher and also from working with local authorities, speech and language therapists, early years settings and schools to guide decisions related to the Wellcom product, and most recently in the very exciting process of digitising the Wellcom toolkits. My objective is to ensure that colleagues seeking to identify and support children with speech, language and communication difficulties are able to use the Wellcom toolkit effectively and embed communication-friendly practices into their setting. I am delighted today to be able to turn the focus of this podcast to the important links between speech, language, communication and well-being. This is a subject close to my heart. I'm really pleased to be joined in conversation today by Katie Mullen and Nikki Martin. Katie is an experienced speech and language therapist working with Dartmoor Multi Academy Trust, and Nikki is an inclusion consultant with the North Star Inclusion Advisory Team based at Rushall Primary School in Walsall. I can't wait to get going with today's conversation with such experienced and passionate colleagues with a wealth of expertise. Thank you for joining me today. Katie, could you introduce yourself to our listeners and let us know a little bit about your background?
Sure. So I'm Katie Mullen. I'm a speech and language therapist. I'm working for Dartmoor Multi Academy Trust down in Devon. I am the only speech and language therapist working across the trust. We have many primary schools, and we also have three colleges as well as part of our trust. So I'm working right across the board from the preschoolers right through to college age.
Thank you. And Nikki, can you tell us a bit about yourself as well?
Sure. I'm a senior inclusion consultant for North Star Inclusion Advisory Team. We're a traded service providing inclusion support to schools in Walsall and across the West Midlands, from preschool right through to secondary.
And Walsall, obviously, is very close to where Wellcom was born in Sandwell. It's your neighbouring, aren't you?
Yes, we are. Yeah.
So, Nikki, just to start off with, well-being is a topic that's really hot on the lips of everybody working in schools and school management at the moment. Can you tell us a bit about the size of the problem?
Yeah, it's certainly a big priority in schools at the moment because of the number of pupils that we have got that are suffering from well-being and emotional regulation differences or difficulties. And it certainly goes across all phases from early years right the way through to secondary. I think as an inclusion team, we're very much often called in to support a class or a pupil and with learning needs, but actually when we dig that little bit deeper and take that holistic view of the child, we recognise that there are well-being issues and that those may stem from something different to cognition and learning, and it may well be a speech and language need that is there underlying and contributing to that well-being of the pupil.
Thank you. And yes, it's really important to get that holistic picture, isn't it? Katie, what are the links between language and well-being? Is it true that you have to be able to name an emotion to regulate it? How else are they interlinked?
So yeah, hugely interlinked. It's important that we make a distinction, I think, between language and communication, as a child can be a very effective communicator without the language. So no, they don't need the language to be able to regulate their emotions. But obviously it helps, and we know that through those who work with children of all ages, that the more language they have, the easier they find regulating their emotions. So for the younger ones who maybe don't have as much language, who have quite specific speech and language needs, It's about making sure that their educators are aware of how else they can support them to regulate their emotions. So it's thinking maybe a little bit more out of the box and thinking through other strategies that can be used, lots of visual support. There's lots of things available out there. One of them I can think of as being like the 5-point scale that has visual pictures of these different levels of emotions. So yeah, that's a huge interlinking between well-being and speech and language for sure.
And what are the factors that are behind many of these speech, language and communication difficulties that young people are experiencing?
So factors, they can be very vast. Not only have you got the environmental factors, but you've got the genetic factors. So there'll be children who have, you know, family history of speech and language and communication difficulties, those that are maybe more predisposed to have language difficulties as well. And then throw in the environmental factors and also things like a pandemic and lack of interaction and social, you know, integration. And you are going to be getting a lot of, you know, a lot of need within the speech and language communication area.
Nikki, we know that it's not just children with very significant speech and language difficulties who are impacted by this. So in your schools, what strategies do you use to try and make sure that all children can develop their ability to regulate and to improve their well-being?
Absolutely. I think these speech language communication needs very often go unrecognised. Children are very good at masking and following the lead of others around them. So we don't really notice until something goes perhaps more wrong. So it's really important as classroom teachers that we are modelling good language and good vocabulary throughout the day. So quality first provision within classrooms is absolutely crucial for this. It's important that we're using really specific language around emotions and not just saying, oh, what you've just done has made me happy, what you've just done has made me feel really sad. What we need to be doing is actually using those more specific vocabularies of actually, I'm feeling very excited today, my tummy's bubbling and that means I'm feeling excited, or what you've just done there has actually made me feel a little bit cross, a little bit angry, or I'm feeling frustrated, so that we're modelling the words and modelling the emotion and actually describing why it is that we feel that way. And by doing that, we can enable children to be able to use that language as well, so that they can communicate to others how they are feeling and what emotion they have, in order to be able to deal with the emotion and maintain that good well-being. And as Katie said, in terms of the emotional regulation tools, we promote having those tools available in the classroom for all pupils, not just those who are struggling with their emotional well-being, and that they are on display. And again, as teachers, we're talking about where we are on that emotional regulation scale, so that children begin to understand that actually, as human beings, we all experience and feel the full range of emotions at different times of the day, and we can support ourselves to regulate when we need to by taking particular actions that suit us as an individual. And through that, then that well-being becomes part of the classroom diet and communication.
That's a proper diet. And Nikki, just one more thing. How much are we confident that children are understanding what teachers are saying when teachers are asking them about their well-being?
That's a good question, because sometimes I don't think we are. And that's difficult, isn't it? But I think the more that we use the language, and the more that we've got the visuals to support the language that we're using, and the more that we try to describe what that emotion feels like, the better the children will understand, and the better they will be able to then label their own emotions and feelings for themselves and know when they actually need to take a little bit of action to re-regulate and re-establish the balance.
Thank you. For colleagues new to speech, language and communication difficulties and new to Wellcom, let's take a moment to pause our conversation with Katie and Nikki and hand over to Emma and Paul for some Wellcom-specific insights by way of our Data Spotlight Explainer, designed to demystify data and assessment terminology.
Hello, I'm Paul McLeod, and the Regional Director responsible for the relationships my team have with local authorities across England and Wales and with schools across Scotland and Ireland. I'm joined by Emma Dibden, one of our assessment specialists for Sound and Wellbeing at GL Assessment. So Emma, how can settings get a picture of SLCN skills of their children using the Welcome Toolkit?
I think that's a great question. I was a former SENCO, and for me, speech, language and communication needs, which is what SLCN stands for, was a really important component factor when we were thinking about the individual strengths and challenges of our learners. And Welcome is a really helpful universal screener that can help here, and it can be administered by anybody within about 15 minutes, which is great because the assessments then going to support that understanding of speech, language and communication skills for learners, whether they're in an early year setting or in a primary school. As a past Welcome user, I found the screener really easy to administer, and I often shared that responsibility with some of our learning support assistants. Now, I used the paper version. That was the only thing available to me at the time. But now, really excitingly, colleagues have the option to choose between that paper or a digital or a hybrid version of both, choosing a format to suit the practitioner in their setting and for their learners. I think that's a really exciting development for anybody, but especially those who are new to Welcome and the option to choose a digital assessment.
And Emma, adding to that excitement, so what does a Welcome screen tell us?
Well, I always found it a really useful part of a graduated response model. So that's where we're matching our support to the needs of the learners and their individual strengths and challenges. It can help to identify areas of common language challenge that might exist so we can address them for all learners. And it can help to identify those that might need more targeted support as a priority. Data is presented using a really easy to digest traffic light system, or red, amber, green scale. And alongside that, the individual report lists each learner's targets with direct connections to practical evidence-based activities from our big book of ideas.
And Emma, another area to explore, I've spoken with lots of colleagues in different settings over the years, and particularly during some of our locality events and webinars, who often speak about the benefits of Welcome in terms of providing a universal approach using familiar foundations and language to support all learners. But tell me, how else can it help?
I think those are absolutely really valid benefits. But as I mentioned before as well, when you're using it with all learners, Welcome can help to inform what we might describe as that universal design for learning. We know, don't we, that learning environments that are language rich and that are really well connected to well-being are good for all learners. The strategies and activities from the big book of ideas, which I mentioned before, were designed by speech and language therapists. So those are going to help to upskill teachers and practitioners and support co-production with parents and carers. And what I mean by that is building those positive relationships between the home and learning settings. Now, of course, there's always going to be a small number of learners who are going to require that more specialist support from somebody like a speech and language therapist or similar. Wouldn't it be really great if we could significantly reduce gaps before we refer to those specialists? In my experience, that's where Welcome helps. It's supporting that effective language learning, and it's helping to prioritise those next steps through visible data.
So Emma, I've seen so much progress and impact in this field over the last number of years, and particularly since the COVID era and the rollout of so many Welcome projects. One of them, we've seen some incredible insights to using the Welcome digital reporting tool as a means of tracking data and progress at the Welcome project at Bloomsbury Nursery School. We've also learned a lot from the City of York on the Early Talk for York project and their research from a multidisciplinary approach to improving children's communications and language outcomes by the age of five, an absolutely incredible project. Please do look out for your invitation to our Welcome digital launch event on the 22nd of May.
And now back to our interview with Katie and Nikki. So, Katie, what strategies can we use to help children develop the language and communication skills that they really need, because it's not just well-being, it's everything that they're doing they're going to need that language for. So what strategies can we all use?
Well, I think if we're thinking certainly about the younger ones in Dartmoor Multi Academy Trust, who I work with, just kind of finished or still going with a project that's looking at improving speech language communication support to the children in EYFS. And through that has been a lot of training and educating of to the staff in how to support and what to be doing on a daily basis. Because actually, for those children who aren't maybe coming up red on assessment on screening, but are coming up on more amber, actually what they need is they need that real universal approach to support their communication within the classroom. And that's what this training that we've been doing, and part of that has been using the Wellcom as our tool for screening those children. And the staff have been really receptive. They've taken on a lot of advice and recommendations, but it's really through those, the nuts and bolts is really those adult child interactions. Those relationships are so key, especially in those early years, but beyond as well. And if an adult can get that right, and that's what I mean by adult child interactions, what I mean is looking at how they're approaching the child. Are they just coming at the child and talking at them, or are they just giving them a bit of space? Are they allowing them time to maybe communicate themselves? Are they observing what they're doing? Are they modeling appropriate levels of language? Are they maybe using too many questions? All these little things, if they're tweaked, can make such a difference. And actually, I say that those are the key strategies we put in place within early years. But I remember talking to some secondary school staff. They just happened to pop into some training I was doing. They just entered the wrong room. And actually they stayed, because what they were hearing was actually really applicable to secondary age students as well. Even at that age, they still benefit from those strategies of being given time to say their piece, being listened to, receiving those excellent models of language structure. So yeah, it's not just about the little ones that really benefit.
Because of course, children are continuously developing in their language throughout primary school and beyond. And can you tell us a bit about some of the sort of language leaps and language and communication steps which Key Stage 2 children are going through?
Yeah, so when children reach Key Stage 2, naturally the vocabulary within their subjects, within the education, there's a massive leap in the level of complexity. There's the different tiers of vocabulary that are being used, and a lot more is expected of them. So what we do find is that children can often not be picked up until maybe Key Stage 2, because they've actually coped in the earlier years. Maybe not excelled, but they've coped to the point where they're past screenings. There's not been any other red flags. Their behaviour's been fine. They just got on. Whereas they hit Key Stage 2 and suddenly it's a real challenge. And then they get a referral to a speech and language therapy. And lo and behold, there are some significant language needs, because a lot more is expected of them. So we've got not only the educational language that's increasing, but also the social side of communication. There's a lot more expectation on students of that age to be able to understand the social nuances and the higher level language skills that comes, and the expectation of being able to banter with their friends, joke, the sarcasm, the idioms, all those things. And children with speech language communication needs can really be left behind within those areas too.
I can see how easily that would lead to some really big falling out between children. Nikki, is this relevant to secondary school pupils?
It certainly is, yeah. I think in terms of wellbeing, we certainly see even bigger issues within our secondary community, and school reluctance, and certainly those peer relationships. And very often it's because part of the contributing factor to that is the complexity of peer relationships in adolescence, and pupils very much feel as though they don't fit anymore, or they can't follow the conversation that's happening between peers, or there's a lot of misinterpretation of what peers are meaning. And this can lead to big safeguarding issues as well, in terms of bullying or pupils getting themselves into trouble because they're doing what other pupils they think are asking them to do or have suggested that they try. So yeah, it certainly is a big difficulty. And if it's gone unnoticed prior to them joining secondary, then things can very quickly go wrong.
So what I'm hearing is that it's really important for schools to address this and to take quite a holistic approach to both well-being and communication. And what I'm hearing from both of you is this real importance of modelling. So modelling that sort of mindfulness, mentalisation of how you're feeling, and to be able to talk about that in nuanced language, but also about modelling the vocabulary and the language structures to use, and to be mindful, I guess, Kate, of what you were saying earlier about where that student is at that point in time in that conversation, and giving them that space to think about what they're going to say and to assess their feelings and respond. Would you say that there's a utopia of what this should look like? Do we have any hope of achieving it? Or is this about getting the best we can do, Katie?
To be honest, I think in the years I've been working, the needs are getting greater. But with that, I feel like the desire to support these children has increased also. I feel like staff I work with are maybe becoming a little bit more in tune with how important speech language communication needs are. I mean, it is the absolute priority in so many school trusts at the moment. And that says a lot. So there's always going to be these needs. There always has been and there always will. But I feel like if we as a society and those working with these children have a real passion to support them, that's really positive and gives me, you know, high hopes for making a difference for these children.
I think, like the children that we're working with, we all just need to keep learning, don't we? It's a journey we need to do. Thank you so much to you, Katie, and to you, Nikki, for joining me today. It's been a really insightful and very positive discussion, and I was really interested to hear your viewpoints. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When was the moment you realised the power of assessment data, and what was the impact of that realisation on your learners' experience? Our lightbulb moments allow us to share these aha moments. Think of this as an opportunity to step into someone else's staff room and to learn something new from their ways of working. This month, we give special thanks to Rochdale Local Authority and St Martin's School Northwood for sharing their stories.
Hi, my name is Emily Humphrey and I'm a teaching and learning advisor in Rochdale Local Authority. Our welcome lightbulb moment was to use both the EYFS and primary welcome to support our children at times of transition. Many of our children, with thanks to amazing staff, manage and sometimes mask their speech, language and communication needs. Then, when they move from setting to school and between schools, these needs can present in many ways, including academically, socially, impacting on their behaviour, engagement in class and attendance. To enhance all transitions, we now facilitate and encourage the use of Welcome and the Big Book of Ideas for all settings and schools. Key information about children's speech, language and communication needs are then shared on transition and allow for a consistent approach to supporting the children. In addition to this, teams from across the LA, such as those supporting our Cared For Children, Attendance, Fair Access and SEND, also use Welcome to explore and to support our children.
Marsha Davis, Head of Learning Support at St Martin's School. So the advantage of using the GLS assessment data is the fact that all the assessments can be interlinked. Strengths and weaknesses are highlighted and can support targeted interventions or potentially identify cognition and learning or communication interaction difficulties which support our referral process. The data pinpoints specific areas of need that can be addressed to aid progression, supporting learners to be able to access the curriculum with more ease. As a SENCO, I have learned that this data supports parental discussion, report writing, and provides a secure evidence baseline to ensure that we close our learners' gaps. It's helped me to gain confidence in formulating next steps to ensure that all learners achieve.
So get involved. It's really simple. All you need to do is send us a WhatsApp voice note with your contribution to 07917 516 515. Many thanks to everyone who has sent their voice notes in so far. We have loved listening back to these and look forward to sharing more of them in future episodes. Thanks for joining us today for our assessment Joining the Dots podcast. If you would like any more information from us, please head to our training and support site, support.gl-assessment.co.uk or support.gl-education.com, depending on where you are in the world. Tweet us at @GL_assessment or @GL_education and email us if you'd like to know more or contribute. We would love to hear from you, and our email address is podcast@gl-assessment.co.uk. Please do follow and rate our podcast, share with your friends and colleagues, and to be notified when new episodes are available, please hit subscribe. You can also check out the Renaissance Space podcast from our friends at Renaissance. Do join us next time, and thanks for listening.